Community of Blakemore United Methodist, I am deeply thankful to be here with you today. And I want you to know that part of the reason I'm thankful to be here with you is because of your witness in the Nashville community, for what you stand for as a church, for the work of justice that you're doing every day, for the way you represent inclusivity and the deep love of God. Thank you. It's an honor to be here. I work at the Children's Hospital not far from here as a chaplain, and I have a small Bible that sits on my desk. I brought it with me as Exhibit A today, just so you know that I'm a good Bible reading chaplain. I remember memorizing the Ten Commandments as a child from the thin, you remember those paper-thin pages? I'm used to using a digital Bible on my iPad now, but I remember the thin pages of this small, of course it was King James Version, as a good Southern Baptist in rural North Carolina, and it was covered in dog stickers. He's wearing a bandana, in case you can't see. He's a fancy dog. And hand-drawn scribbles, probably to my grandmother's dislike. The Ten Commandments, were listed on pages covered in ivy leaves in the back under the headline, Scripture Memory Gems. I would flip to the pages of the Thou Shalt Nots often, and I knew them all by heart. I was a relentless rule follower, always focused on not doing the things I wasn't supposed to do. And yet what I did not always make an immediate connection with was the ethic, the guiding words of Jesus that ran beneath all of these commandments. I had been given rules, but I had not been given reasons for the rules. I was missing the character and heart of a God that lived beneath the guidelines, the vision of God for our world. In Matthew, Jesus is asked, "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" He answers, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and all the prophets." So as we begin to take a look at two commandments today and continue in the series that you all have been in together on Sundays, I wonder if we can hear these two through the lens of the words of Jesus in Matthew. Do not murder. Do not steal. They're good rules. They're pretty obvious ones, in fact. Don't take things that don't belong to you, and don't kill people. It seems pretty simple, right? Most of us feel like we can follow those rules. But could we zoom out a bit and ask, how do the breaking of these two commandments keep us from loving God, our Creator, with our whole heart, soul, and mind, and loving our neighbor as we would love our own self, as Jesus said? Is there something more here to understand about the heart of God? And if we are not doing these things, if we're following the thou shalt nots in the back of my Bible, then what are we doing instead? Just being obedient to some basic expectations? What is the true cost of these rules and the ethic that runs beneath them? I think Cain knew. And maybe he didn't know right away. Cain and Abel both offered gifts to God, and God affirmed Abel's gift but did not affirm Cain's. Cain was angry and down in his spirits. I suppose if I were Cain, maybe if you were Cain, we would feel the same way. You see, Cain was the firstborn. With his birth came the great hope that he would restore all creation. He was his mother's favorite. He worked the ground with great strength and was able to produce a good crop. And he brought it before the God who gave him life and breath and expected a blessing back from this God. Now, I could speculate about why he didn't receive the Lord's favor as he had hoped, but the narrative in Genesis doesn't tell us. What it does tell us is that while Cain was the firstborn, Abel was given a name to be representative of his life. In Hebrew, Abel's name meant vanity, vapor, or nothing, second best. maybe a vapor of a life, maybe a nothing of a life. So God accepts the sacrifice of the second best brother, and Cain disconnects. He pushes away, and God reaches out to ask him why he is angry, why he is downcast, asking, Cain, if you do what is right, will you not be accepted? As if to say, there is a way for you, Cain, always a way for acceptance if you choose and invite it. But instead of inviting what is right and good and just, Cain invites Abel out to a field. Cain attacks and kills Abel. The firstborn kills the second best brother. And so we have the first murder. The first murder here in our origin, in our Genesis story, in the beginning of our narrative of faith. Did Cain know murder was wrong? Did Cain know his anger and attack would be deadly? God reaches back out again. Cain, where is your brother? Cain replies, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? Cain's parents alienated themselves from God with broken promises in a garden, and Cain has now alienated himself from God with a murder in a field. He steals life and alienates himself from his own brother. And by lessening the value of his brother's life, he demeans the value of his own. Cain's humanity is tied up with Abel's. Does he know this? When he asks, am I my brother's keeper, does he already know the answer? As I reflected on Cain's situation this week, I was reminded of these words by Padraig Ó Tuama, an Irish poet and theologian. This is an excerpt of his poem, The Facts of Life. That you were born and you will die. That you will sometimes love enough and sometimes not. That you will lie if only to yourself. That you will get tired. That you will learn most from the situations you did not choose. That there will be some things that move you more than you can say. That you will live, that you must be loved. That you will avoid questions most urgently in need of your attention. Am I my brother's keeper? That you will avoid questions most urgently in need of your attention. Am I my brother's keeper? Has he ever wondered this before? Is this the point of realization of his responsibility to Abel? Perhaps it had been easier to avoid. Perhaps it was a painful realization for Cain. And I get it, because I find myself overwhelmed with the same question some days. I leave the hospital where I have shown up with lots of energy and passion and given everything I have to support the deep resilience of children and families facing illness and uncertainty. And I drive home through Nashville traffic. You know what that's like. Get home, cook dinner, I finally crash on the couch and catch up with my husband, and I think I'm going to just aimlessly scroll through Instagram or Facebook or maybe through the news, and then my eyes are stuck and stunned and overwhelmed with the salty tears that come because I am not looking at pictures that my friends' kids drew in summer camp. I'm not remembering the pictures my patients drew while I spent time with them that day in a setting where they were well cared for. But instead, my eyes see the drawings of migrant children. And the pictures that are going to come on the screen are pictures that have been drawn in the last 2 weeks. If we can grab those images, thanks. These are pictures drawn in the last 2 weeks by 10 and 11-year-olds staying at Catholic Charities Humanitarian Respite Center in McAllen, Texas, shortly after release from a U.S. Customs and Border Protection processing center. After being separated from their families, the kids took markers to paper and illustrated their pain, drawing themselves with sad faces behind bars, sleeping next to open toilets, guards watching them from a tower above. Am I my brother's keeper? I'm not murdering, I'm not stealing, I'm not the one causing harm. So why does it feel so deeply wrong to stand by and watch this happen in my world? I believe it is because for every do not or thou shalt not, there is a but please, please in the name that is all holy and sacred, please do this. And so I cannot stand by and watch it happen. We press up against the commandment, do not murder, when we do not seek to restore and uphold the sacredness of every life. We violate the commandment, do not steal, when we do not protect the beloved identity and dignity of every person, when we do not speak against and mobilize with action against the human power that tries to steal their God-given dignity and breath and life and flourishing. I remember the first time I read Mark Jarman's poem, If I Were Paul. I suppose it stopped me because it called to me. It nudged me towards remembering something powerful. I have learned that memory is a powerful motivator. Memory is what many of my patients and families rely on when they are grasping, when there are no more answers, when there are no more sufficiently comforting platitudes or greeting cards. Memory provides meaning. Memory reminds us that we have survived hard things before and God is incarnational and always with us. Memory can give us some of what we need to take another breath. Children and teenagers and adults often ask me as their chaplain some form of the questions, who is God? And who am I? And what could all of this suffering possibly mean? I hear their lament and I invite them back to what is deepest inside of their soul, to how God made them and what meaning they have as a loved creation, a loved child of God. I often ask, what is it? What is it that no one and no diagnosis can take away from you? Mark Jarman's words in his poem invite me to remember this truth for myself. He writes, consider how you were made. Consider the loving geometry that sketched your bones, the passionate symmetry that sewed flesh to your skeleton. Consider the first time you conceived of justice. Consider the first knowledge of otherness, how it felt. Now imagine what I have to say when I learn of your enterprising viciousness, the discipline with which one of you turns another into a robot or a parasite or a maniac or a body strapped to a chair. Imagine what I have to say. Do the impossible. Restore life to those you have killed, wholeness to those you have maimed, goodness to what you have poisoned, trust to those you have betrayed. Bless each other with the heart and soul, the hand and eye, the head and foot, the lips, tongue and teeth, the inner and outer ear, the flesh and spirit, the brain and bowels, the blood and lymph, the heel and toe, the muscle and bone, the waist and hips, the chest and shoulders, the whole body clothed and naked, young and old, aging and growing up. I send this not knowing if you will receive it, or if having received it, you will read it, or if having read it, you will know that it contains my blessing. I remember the day I read those words for the first time, and I believe it was a combination of the lines, consider how you were made, and consider the first time you conceived of justice. I read them and I wept. I believe it was because I sensed in myself God asking, do you remember who you are? That you are made and created as a child of God, that you were made with a mind and a soul and a body that can comprehend, the great responsibility we have to one another. And so I wonder for you today, do you remember the first time you realized what justice looked like? When you felt it deep in your bones and you could not look away? Can you call it to memory now, even now? I wonder if this is how Cain felt when he heard God ask, "Where is your brother, Abel?" I wonder if this is how we feel, and if we still let ourselves feel it. And I can confess openly today that I think it's a lot easier to focus on do not murder and do not steal than the everyday steady work of restoring life, of seeking resurrection, of reinstating what has been taken and stolen, of the hope that we so desperately need in the places that are dark and despairing. And so the truth may be that there's not a set of rules that can come down from heaven onto stone tablets that will give us every single answer and all the roadmaps and all the plans to take action in the darkness, to really lean into the justice that is needed. And yet, I do believe that God has gifted us with these words, with each of these words, and a consciousness that holds the responsibility to care deeply for others. And so I hope we leave this space of community today and know that we were given commandments, not because they have all of the answers, but because they are an invitation to the ethic and heart of a loving and just God. Just like with Cain, can we hear God ask us today, "Where is your brother? Where is your sister?" And may we answer boldly together, "I am my brother's keeper. I am my sister's keeper." Amen.